Good day, everybody. My guest is Neil Adams, and thinking very hard about it, a lot of people believe in the steady state theory, which means basically that everything is as it always has been. Nothing has really changed. Others, of course, believe in the Big Bang theory, that everything came from one single little tiny thing smaller than a quark and became everything that now is. Fitting neatly into the middle of that is continuous creation. So I think that Neil is very well perhaps on to something that does make some sense to me. The proof of it, of course, is something else again. But then again, they've never really proven the steady state theory nor the Big Bang theory conclusively, have they? So why not continuous creation? In a moment, your questions for Neil Adams. I'm Art Bell. Well, it seems to me, Neil, the critical part of all this, of course, is in trying to prove it. And you said you were funding from your own pocket an attempt to do exactly that. How are you trying to prove it?
Well, I'm trying to prove it by having the various methodologies, the three methodologies, calculated for a 10-year period to see exactly if there is a growth and what that growth is. And it's turned out to be a very difficult process. I've had a fellow working on it for 4 months now, and he's gotten the information, and we're trying to put the information together, but it's very, very difficult, and the information is contradictory. Let me give you an example, if I may. In 2002, it was announced by one of these organizations that the equator of the Earth was growing and had been growing for several years, getting larger for several years, like 4 or 5 years, something like that. that's where the technology improved. Anyway, so they said the equator was growing progressively. It didn't, like, go back. And they said theoretically they felt that it was getting smaller several years before that. And then about 2 months after they came out with that report, or maybe a little bit less, they said, there was a report from the same folks, and they said, you know, this idea of growth, I mean, if you can explain it by assuming that if pressure is put on the top of the Earth and on the bottom of the Earth, you know, it expands from at the center. And they put it out as like an explanation, to which I would say, excuse me, you put pressure on the top and the bottom of the Earth and it expands out in the middle, and you're presenting this as your explanation that for several years, you've noted that the Earth seems to be growing at the equator. Whose hands push that? I mean, I don't understand that. I don't understand the contradictory information that comes from the world of science in explanations that are supposed to convince regular folks that they're being sensible about it. It doesn't make sense to me. So I'm trying to put the whole thing together and have it make some kind of sense, and trying to do it as with my maps and my globes, in a precise mathematical way. Just not easy.
And by the way, for those who would like to see some of these, you've got them on the website, and I think we've got a link up, right?
Yeah, you certainly do.
So you should all go take a look. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Neil Adams. Hello.
Hello, this is Charles from Harrisburg.
Yes.
Hi, Charles. How are you?
Like, you're coming from the evolution perspective.
Evolution?
Right? Yeah, I mean, it ties in with geology and that fictitious table that was basically thought up out of thin air back in the 1700s, right?
What was?
Geological table, you know, where the rock sediments saying, you know, this is from 200 million years ago, you know?
I think that probably there was a segment of society that represents the science of the Earth that, in fact, feels that way, sure. Not necessarily do they necessarily agree with everybody, nor does everybody agree with them.
Yeah, when the other side doesn't get heard, not nearly enough, you know.
Well, I don't think you're on the other end of my website, because I get emails all the time from folks who think that the Earth is a lot younger than that. And I answer them as politely as I can, and I don't necessarily either agree or disagree with them. I think that it's important for it to be heard, and in fact it is heard, as I understand it, on shows like this.
Well, as a matter of fact, continuous creation is consistent with evolution. There's no problem there.
Because I truly believe, and I mean, I've been taught evolution all my life, and I was never taught the other aspect of creation until just recently from this man, Dr. Kent Norvind.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically shows conclusive proof that debunks evolution and how evolution has basically been a tool for so many years of Satan, you know? It's led so many Christians away from the faith, from the Bible, you know?
I honestly can't imagine how that would happen, but if somebody says it's true and they believe it, I think that they have a right to say it, and in fact, they should say it to anybody and everybody who's willing to listen. It's hard for me to believe that faith would be dependent on how old the Earth is. I find that hard to believe. But
well, indeed, for some fundamentalists, it certainly is, Neil.
Sure, I understand.
No question about that. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Neil Adams and Art Bell. Hi.
Yes, good. Well, I'll say good afternoon to you, Art, in Manila. This is my first time actually calling to you, so, you know, you're very loved, even when I disagree with you. But in terms of the previous caller, the national, what I want to say is that I think this is a very intriguing and fascinating program, and I forget your name again.
Neil.
I wish you a lot of luck. I hope you're working on a book. I think Bucky Fuller, in his work, he made us understand, you know, he considers himself a comprehensivist. And there's so many things that aren't discovered in scientists because of the specialization which you talked at the beginning. And they're always changing their theories. In the most recent National Geographic, there's an article where, you know, Leakey, they had, when Leakey was in, where was he? In
Africa.
The Rift Valley. That was the Homo sapiens that they had said was 130 1,000 years old turned out to be almost 200,000
right.
years old. So, you know, you're doing great work. But I have a brief three-part question. First of all, I want you to tell us about how you know, particularly with your background, how you got involved in this, the genesis of this, and you know, a thumbnail sketch of the story that got you going in this direction. I also want to know, recently picked up my very battered copy of Worlds in Collision by Emmanuel Velikovsky.
Right.
And, of course, we know Age is in Chaos, et cetera. So I want to know, and I'll listen over the air because I can hear much better, but I want to know where and what you think of his work and where his work factors in. In addition to people like Michael Cremo and his Forbidden Archaeology, David Hatcher, Childress, and I'll continue to listen. I'm enjoying the show.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much. All right,
thanks.
The genesis of all this.
The genesis of all this is first of all, of course, my interest in science. Second of all, this guy named Samuel Warren Carey, who died 2 years ago and who was an honored geologist. Even though his theory was not accepted, he still was a very powerful and honored geologist. I didn't know when I first heard about this that it was, quote, Samuel Warren Carey. All I knew was that this guy had come up with this theory, and I had listened to the theory, and it made so much more sense than the common theory that I was stunned that no one was listening to it. I would try to imagine myself being Chinese and being told that the Pacific was this giant ocean, and somehow the Atlantic was together, and these Americans and European arrogant fools assume that this is where the Earth spread from and not from the Pacific Ocean. So, and I thought about it, and I thought, my goodness, you know, this is very one-sided science. Why doesn't somebody step up and really try to prove the physics? So I thought, well, I can't actually think of anybody who would do it. I can't, in all honesty, who would do this? And I thought, well, somebody who loves science, somebody who has some time, somebody who doesn't have tenure at a college, somebody who can't easily be attacked, somebody who's really not afraid of expressing opinions that might be different from other people, because in my field, I've been pretty much of a revolutionary.
And I've learned not to be afraid. And somebody who can stay the course and somebody who can shut up until he figures it out. So I shut up for 30 years. And I
Worlds in collision.
I didn't read those things. And all I didn't read Velikovsky. You know, I've heard about it. I didn't read the rest of this stuff because I didn't feel that my being tainted by all these things would have been a fair thing to do and to have them lead me by the nose. Why didn't I just go out and investigate it myself and find out from science exactly what's going on? And all the stuff that I talk about is in all the books. There's nothing strange about what I'm saying. You can look it all up. It's all there. What I did was I just made a very large picture puzzle, and I started putting the pieces together. It's sort of like when I put the Earth together. I put all the continents together, and they fit. Well, you know what? The chances are of all those pieces fitting together, there is no chance if common theory is correct. It's impossible.
Right.
It can't be that I can push them together on a smaller planet, and they fit exactly. That's not possible.
And what about all this forbidden archaeology, these things that are found that don't fit in with traditional scientific views of how it all happened? They're sort of put up on the shelf and just forgotten. I guess a lot of it would fit in, perhaps, with what you believe.
I'm interested in all of this, and there are people who are investigating this, but very often these things don't get a lot of attention. The bones and the dinosaurs that are being dug up in Antarctica are incredibly important. Remember I was talking about the Pterocarosaurus, if I may jump back for just a second. There was, and I said that they were found in France and they only existed for a certain period of time. Well, they found the Pterocarosaurus thigh bone in Africa, the middle of Africa. Well, if there was 2,000 miles of ocean between the two, the top and bottom, how could a Pterocarosaurus that only existed in a 5-million-year range possibly be in Africa and in France? Unless, I don't know, the Pterocarosaurus took a day trip to Africa or, you know, flew a plane, or I don't know how it could have happened.
Yeah.
And then they discussed it on the Discovery Channel, and some young scientist who seemed to be bright-eyed and bushy-tailed said, well, you know about they have things called vegetable mats, you know, where vegetable mats break away from a landmass and they travel across the ocean, you know, and they get to this island and animals are transmitted that way. And I thought, he's saying this in the face of the fact that a Pterocarosaurus is the size of a Tyrannosaurus rex.
Mm-hmm.
That somehow a Tyrannosaurus rex stepped on a vegetable mat in France and traveled to Africa.
Yeah. Okay. First on caller line, you're on the air with Neil Adams and Art Bell. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Howdy. Yeah.
How are you?
This is Jim. I'm calling from Hawaii.
How are you,
yes,
Jim?
Good. Neil, your concept of that when you talk in simple terms, I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me, because from my experience, I've found that the basic truths are very simple.
Of course.
And that's like Einstein's E equals MC squared. That's
exactly
a simple truth, okay?
Exactly.
And it's easy to understand. I mean, it's not easy to understand, but the formula is quite straightforward.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's what you're saying here. You're saying that the energy is being created to matter, and the gamma rays are being created to being switched to hydrogen in the center of the Earth. Now, not exactly that, but you're getting there.
And I want to get into the particle physics of it, because, you know, people just fall asleep.
But basically, you're postulating an energy conversion to matter.
Right. Well, I'm postulating that there is a prime matter in the universe,
okay,
and that's converted into matter. And we don't know exactly what it is, but it seems to be electromagnetic in nature, because what we do is we add energy from a photon to it, and then it becomes matter.
Okay. And now, do you see any correlation or any that would relate to this black gold overload book that they have, where they talk about oils being continually created? Now,
uh-huh,
if you've got hydrogen at the center of the Earth being running loose, you can combine that with carbon, which has got to be there,
mm-hmm,
and you're making hydrocarbons. Now, if you're making hydrocarbons in the center of the Earth, then why could that would cause the Earth to swell. and yeah. And then you would also.
But, you know, you don't have to go very far to convince me on this one.
And it would also account for the people who believe that oil is the process of
creation
of oil
about,
is a continuous process. Yes, of course.
I think that I would, in all honesty, what I do generally is I give things percentages. I would have to give that theory at least a 50% chance of being true. And that, to me, is a very big deal. And I think that it ought to be investigated from that point of view. I think right before we switch to hydrogen energy, we ought to come to a conclusion and then stop digging oil up out of the ground.
Well, even if it's true, that doesn't mean that it's being created at a rate that will sustain us in any way, no matter how you want to talk about it.
Well, I'll tell you, Art, the truth is that I've sort of watched this whole thing from a long time ago, and I've listened to people predict when we're going to run out of oil. And the amount of oil that we've pulled out of the ground from the 1920s has increased and increased and increased and increased, and there seems no end to it. Now, and there may be an end to it, but I haven't seen it. And every prediction that I've ever heard has turned out to be not only untrue, but a joke. It seems like no matter where we go, we can find oil. And the more we learn about geology, the likelihood is the more oil we'll find. I don't think the problem is finding oil and whether we're going to run out of oil. I think the problem is oil is a bad thing to burn. It hurts the atmosphere. And if you actually combine hydrogen and oxygen and you use that to create electrical energy, then the byproduct of that is H2O, and you can drink that. So oil,
Greg in San Jose, California asks, if matter were being continually created, as your guest is speculating, then the ratio of hydrogen to other elements in the universe would be different than it is.
Exactly.
No?
It would remain exactly the same. Why would it change? If everything is being created in the same amounts, in the same general amounts, everything would remain the same in the same proportions. We do have to remember that an early universe would have created hydrogen before it created anything else, because after all, hydrogen has no neutrons. So you're going to create an awful lot of hydrogen before you create suns in order to create neutrons, in order to create helium. So 90% of the universe is, in fact, hydrogen. Now, the suns convert it into helium. In my opinion, basically, the way you convert it into helium is you basically squish a hydrogen atom. And that question that I used to ask when I was in high school was, gee, how come hydrogen is the only atom that doesn't have neutrons? Is answered by this answer, and that is because hydrogen atoms are neutrons. Now, I know particle physics, we don't want to get into that. It's just too deep. But
all right, again, though, I'm willing to buy the fact that we've got continuous creation, in effect, underway, and that oil may be, in fact, I wouldn't say endless, but we don't know the rate at which it's being created if that creation process is still underway. In other words, we may be using it at a rate far faster than it's been being created. So we could still run out of economically feasible oil, or of course foul the planet completely.
You know, Art,
whichever.
I don't like to get in the prediction business, almost every time you do it, you end up being wrong.
Right.
And it's a dangerous position to be in. You basically have to go by the science and also the history. One of the things you can use is history, and that's what I do. The history of oil is that there's more and more, and it seems like there's more, and some of these wells that seem to be depleted are renewed. Here's another example. You know what a salt dome is?
I do, but you're going to have to salt dome. Just hold on to that thought,
sure.
And we'll pick up when we get back. It's the bottom of the hour. My guest is Neil Adams, and his theory is perfectly reasonable. Actually, when you consider steady state and the Big Bang, there is something in the middle, and that's a kind of a continuous creation that's been described from the Philippines. I'm Art Bell. Indeed, Southeast Asia. Good day, everybody. I am Art Bell. My guest is Neil Adams, and this program has always been dedicated to examination of things that are not exactly mainstream, not exactly pure science. And that's where we are with Neil. I mean, what he's saying makes all kinds of sense to me. It really does. Even the part about the creation of more oil, although I don't think we're creating it at a rate that we're using it. That would be my opinion only. all of this does kind of make sense. More of it and salt domes in a moment. Okay, Neil, salt domes.
Yeah. Well, you know, scientists tell us that salt domes are, well, of course, salt domes are these things that are under the earth, and a lot of people don't know about them. Let me describe a salt dome for you real quick.
Sure.
Salt dome can be, it's under the earth, and it can be as much as 10 miles long, as much as 3 or 4 miles wide, or as much as 5 miles long, or given number of miles wide. It can be as much as a half mile deep, solid salt. Edge to edge, like a giant stone. In fact, salt is called the only rock we eat. Anyway, salt domes seem to collect under the earth. Now, scientists will tell us that these are evaporated oceans or evaporated portions of seas.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make any sense to me. I don't know of any area that could be 4 or 5 miles wide, 3 or 4 miles wide the other way, and a half mile deep of evaporated salt. Doesn't make sense. But if the earth grows, salt is made of two gases, sodium and chlorine. Those are two elements. If matter is made inside of the earth and gases seep up through the earth, like hydrogen, mm-hmm. oxygen, sodium and chlorine,
right.
Those two gases can combine once they get past that like hot layer that's just under the surface of the earth. Once they get past that and rise up into the earth and hit a cooler area, those two separate gases can combine. If they combine in a normal part of the earth, they'll join with certain minerals, and they'll become part of the minerals that plants absorb the salt from, and we eat the plants, and we get salt into our body. Or they may be attracted to salt domes, join in crystal bonds to the salt that's under the earth that may have started with a seed crystal but essentially has grown into this gigantic crystal, and be and grow under the earth like a geode. Now, if this happens, what that means is that the shallow seas that were on the earth in the age of the dinosaurs before the deep oceans didn't have any salt. They were freshwater seas. So they didn't evaporate. The salt domes may have been collecting under there. But until we had the rifting and spreading of the deep oceans,
mm-hmm.
and then the cracks that the material comes up in the middle of the oceans through these cracks, what happens with those cracks is all the gases that come from inside of the earth enters the ocean. That would include sodium and chlorine. It goes mm-hmm. directly into the ocean from the gases that come up that crack.
Right.
Before those deep oceans, all we had was water on the land. And as you may know, even now, the water on the land is not salt water, unless it's invaded by water from the ocean.
Quite correct, yeah.
So
okay, I get it. I'm everything you say makes as much sense as any of the other theories about it all.
Well,
that I'll say. International line. International
right.
line. You're on the air with Neil Adams. Hello. Hello. International line going once. International line going twice. International line gone. West of the Rockies. You're on the air with Neil Adams. Hi. Hello. Yes.
Yes, I'd like to, just before I start, do you guys respect intellectual property as far if I tell you my
theory? Guess is Neil Adams, since he does what he does, has a very great deal of respect for intellectual property.
Well, I mean, if I say this, will I get the proper credit for it? Because I'd hate to tell the theory of everything and someone else take credit.
I cannot promise you. I mean, if you go on an international talk show, sir, and you spew something forth, you have to imagine somebody might grab it.
Okay, sure, what well, I'm it doing doesn't here. Matter because I'm Josh Ladner from Moselle, Mississippi. And, okay, you have to look at the universe as if God would create it. He would want the universe to be balanced. It would never be out of balance. But you have a universe and an anti-universe. You have your universe and then the opposite of your universe running in backwards time compared to yours. So time is a loop, okay? Mass and matter do expand, but they expand in a way that it was complicated, but you guys were poking around, so I had to come out with it. Okay, as mass and matter expand, everything else expands relative to them. Gravity is the force that keeps this ratio constant. So if something is expanding on our side, then it's also relative in size and space to everything else. So it doesn't appear to be expanding.
Doesn't appear to be growing. Yeah.
Yes,
okay.
Yes,
I think I've got it. Neil, does that make sense?
No.
Sure. I reckon. I don't quite understand it, but I reckon.
Well, he's suggesting that everything is growing, and because everything is growing in proportion, it all seems not to be. I know it doesn't make sense, but if everything's growing at the same rate, it just doesn't seem to be.
I think what that would mean is that atoms are growing, and that is not the case. Mass is being created and is adding to the universe. So, no, I don't think that's the case.
All right. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Neil Adams. Hi.
Hello
there. Yes.
Howdy.
Howdy.
How are you?
Hello? Go ahead, sir. Yes, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Great show, guys. Quick comment, actually, on two questions. One of the questions that you asked, Art, earlier about there being giants in the Bible. I know this is different from the subject, but actually, according to the Old Testament, there were about anywhere, if I remember correctly, 15 to 18 different races of giants, and they were the result of fallen angels coming down and having children with the women of the earth, to answer that question. They were all wiped out in the flood of Noah's time period. The main reason why I called was in reference to the caller that called talking about faith and the age of the earth. In Genesis 1:1, it says that God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was without form and void. If you go to Isaiah, I believe it's 55 or 56, there's a scripture that says whenever God speaks, his words never return to him void. So in order for him to create the earth and it to be void, there had to be a time period in between the two where something happened that caused the earth to be void. Now, most Christian scientists will use the genealogies of various people in the Bible to calculate the age of the earth. But they can't calculate it because there's no measurement for that gap in between God created the earth and the earth was without form and void. So I know it's a different subject from what you were talking about, but anytime I hear somebody call about faith, I try to get my little answer in.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right.
Okay, let's go to this wild card line. You're on the air with Neil Adams. Hi.
Howdy.
Hi, Neil.
How are you?
Hi, Neil. I'd like to ask you how a few things concerning your ideas on dinosaurs, expanding Earth theory, and the creation of matter.
Sure.
Like, I really wanted to know if you could design any experiment that could test or prove or disprove that the Earth is expanding by the creation of matter deep in its core rather than the work of tectonic plates. I mean, the movements of the continents as the work of tectonic plates.
Yeah, one of the ways would be if you measure the Earth and it got bigger, and at times folks have measured the Earth and it's gotten bigger, but I don't think that it's been definitive. And if it was, then all the textbooks that we have would be rewritten by now. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to present all the evidence from all the different areas. To say that there's definitive proof would be foolish of me. I can't do it, because if I could do that, then everything would have changed by now. It's been a difficult road. All I can do is, for example, if you've been to my site, you've been to the sites that we have up, is to show you the maps and the continents and how they fit together, and to explain the logic that would be impossible. To explain how in another science, dinosaurs could not possibly be the size that they're indicated to be and still have the same bone density. To talk about the various things that we've had all these explanations of from science that have been presented as a justification for science as it's taught today, in which there are many, many contradictions. And to point out those contradictions, if I could get the true measurements and I could get it nailed down, which may happen, I don't know that I would be believed. I mean, if a scientist in 1992 says we measured the Earth and the equator seems to be getting bigger every year, but we've got an excuse for it, something is pushing down from the top and the bottom, pretty much there are an awful lot of people that are going to say, well, that's not proof enough. So, you know, if the this is a battle that I'm in, this is a concept that I'm presenting, and it's not just me. It's been presented for 40 years. I cannot claim that I originated it or in any way was the first to say it. What I've done is I've taken all this material from all these various sciences and I've put it together in a bunch. And in order to understand it, you sort of have to have a good memory. You kind of have to go, I remember this, I remember this, I remember this, I remember this. And therefore, all of that seems to make a better explanation, a far better explanation than what I'm hearing that's so contradictory. How there was a Pangea and somehow three-quarters of the surface of the Earth was stripped away and thrown away. Where did it go? That it broke in half, and you can't explain the dinosaurs based on that. There's so many contradictions in the theory that we have today that this theory has, one, can be tested on the basis, does it explain everything better? But that's not going to satisfy everybody. There has to be specific proof. One of the things I have, if you look at my site, is I explain how the Pangea, the island of Pangea, has a certain density. For example, granitic rock is 2.5 times the density of water. Basalt is 3.0 to 3.3 times the density of water. If you put all that stuff on the other side of the Earth, on one side of the Earth, and the ocean is one time the density of water, and it's 4 miles deep, between 2.5 and 4 miles deep, then what happens is the center of gravity of the Earth has to shift toward Pangea by approximately 4 kilometers. If that's what happens, the middle of the Pacific Ocean would rise above the water, and the middle of Pangea would sink beneath the water, and that is not explainable by science.
Okay. All right, let's go west of the Rockies. You're on the air with Neil Adams. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
Howdy. You expatriate, you. Good to talk to you. Listen.
Good
to
talk to you, sir. What's up?
I'm so happy you have somebody talking about dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now dinosaurs, we have evidence that the dinosaurs in Antarctica hibernated during the winter. Dinosaurs, in my opinion, were the crown of creation. If they had another 5 to 7 million years, they already had a binocular vision, opposable thumbs, they would be having their iPods and stuff today.
I think you're probably right.
I wonder, though. I wonder if that really is true. In other words, it seems to me that the process of continuous creation and evolution walk together just hand in hand, just fine. There's not a problem, is there?
No, there's not. And in fact, it's a toss-up whether or not dinosaurs could have survived because, in a way, because of their advantages, they had so much against them. Remember that mammals, first of all, had fur. Second of all, didn't move from the area that they lived in so that they experienced the cold and the hot. They burrowed under the land. They carried their eggs inside of their body and gave birth to young live. They had all the advantages of a creature that's going to survive. All these advantages were taken away from the dinosaurs because of the dinosaurs' advantages. In other words, they were so superior for the world that they lived on, and then when the world changed, in a way, it betrayed them, and they couldn't survive.
Okay. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Neil Adams and Art Bell. Hello.
Art Bell, this is Danny Borders in Nashville. How are you?
Hi, Danny.
I'm a very long-time listener, and congratulations on your move to the Philippines. I've been there myself. It's been a month, about 30 years ago. And had a couple weeks off, was playing music, and hung out on the South China Sea up there north of San Fernando, and was amazed at just how beautiful the Filipino people are and what a beautiful country, and I've never forgotten it, and I hope to come back one day.
Okay, that said, Neil, do you have a question for Neil?
Yes, I do. Okay. I picked up the phone when I heard you referring about the duckbill platypus bones in Antarctica, and this kind of my question to you was posed by an earlier caller about Emanuel Velikovsky's books, and I can set your mind at ease. His books are really about recent history. He's a PhD in geology, astrophysics, and astronomy, and what he basically did was embark on a journey, much as Donnelly did before he wrote his 1880 book, Atlantis, the Antediluvian World. and visited very many, remote parts of the Earth. And his theory was that there were basically two major events, both which happened within the last 10,000 years, where Venus was a comet at the time, wasn't stationary, and it was the first event which triggered the Great Flood. It passed close to the Earth, and turned it on its axis. And then there was a second event, and he basically tied it all in with Greek mythology, and showed scientifically how some of the things that had been recorded in history in the Bible, the manna from heaven, the second event was while the Israelites were fleeing Egypt, and explained how these large objects passing by the Earth turned the Earth on its axis. So that very interesting reading, and certainly nothing that would, interfere with your with your theory, which is, much more expanded in time and in scope.
Well, considering that Venus is about the size of the Earth, to describe it as a comet is probably not very good. And since its orbit seems to be a fixed orbit, I probably would kind of negate that, too. So I guess scientifically you'd kind of have to say that's a little difficult to swallow.
Mm-hmm. Okay. First time caller line, not a lot of time, but you're on the air with Neil Adams. Hi. Hello there. First time caller
line. Can you
hear me?
I'm sorry.
Yes, I hear you.
Okay. Thank you for serving, first of all. And Neil Adams, I think you're absolutely fabulous. I don't know what your website is, but I'm just getting so excited to hear
listening. NeilAdams.com.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
there you go. NeilAdams.com.
And you can go to the Coast to Coast website, and they have stuff there. They have a bunch
you
of
have a
there.
Do you have a beard?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay, then I'm looking at a different. I Googled you, but it must be the wrong guy.
That's the wrong guy.
What I wanted to share was this. To the caller, the gentleman who called in and said something about the giants, that is a misinterpretation. They were not fallen angels. It refers to basically the sons of God were referring to the children of Israel.
Yeah.
And basically it was the men were having women, but it was probably from the family of Cain, and that they were taking these women because they were very beautiful,
sure,
and they were marrying with them.
Right.
And that's what that's all about. But if somebody suggests that, then yes. And I sent you a link on that as well,
okay.
Art. But what I wanted to share with you, I am a Christian, and because of what you're saying, I've always based my belief on facts. I've read Josh McDowell's books and so forth. But as I read those things, and the things that you're saying make me very excited, because when you talk about that little, was it the proton that went around the thing, and then it disappeared? Earlier on, when you started talking about that and you started to get into that scope of it, there was something that in my heart that was impressed upon me, because God to me is a continuum. He is beginning and end. And so one day I was thinking, in church people always talk about how, you walk in the spirit and then we live in the physical world. But I look at on the opposite end of the spectrum. I look at it in terms of we live in a spiritual realm in a physical form. So with what you said, for me at least, it made total absolute sense, because if you look
All right, listen, on that note, we've got, I'm sorry to have to cut you off, but we are very short on time. It's
Thank
Neil
you very
Adams.
Much so. Thank
it's
you.
neiladams.com, correct, Neil?
Yeah.
Okay. Neil, you know, the one thing I didn't ask you throughout all this, where does or does God fit into what you believe?
Well, I don't think that God changes in a universe that's created. I mean, if you say that the universe always existed, it kind of questions whether or not you're actually fitting God into there at all. If the universe is created,
right,
then it certainly has a better place in it than it always existed. So,
all right, buddy, that's it. We are totally out of time. I had to
right.
get that one in, though. Thank you very much, Neil. Take care.
Okay, Art.
All right, folks, that's it. That's Neil Adams, and I think a lot of what he says, though it can't be backed up with hard science, makes absolute sense, as much sense as any of the other theories. From the Philippines, I'm Art Bell. See you tomorrow night.